Hi, it's Mike Church, founder of the Veritas Radio Network and the Crusade Channel. Maybe you didn't know this, so let me clue you in. We are a listener-owned radio enterprise, meaning we're the little guy, the underdog, a David in a stadium full of fake news Goliaths. So, in exchange for your listening to this awesome preview of one of our shows, Puddle's Pity Party, promise me you'll download our free app and use it to listen to that show when it's live. And number two, consider joining us and becoming a paying Founders Pass member by going to crusadechannel.com and clicking the join button at the top of any page. Now that's not asking too much, is it? So go ahead, relax, and enjoy the following feast of original programming exclusively here on the Crusade Channel. King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. There is no enforcement mechanism here. By virtue of you guys, gals, sending that document, there's no way to make him respond to that. Is there? So that's question one. Follow up, is there anything that can force a response?
Well, this is, if we're just a matter of history and theological speculation, this would be a rather fascinating inquiry. But in the real world, we're looking at an almost apocalyptic situation. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
We have a pope who's promulgated a document, Amoris Laetitia, which, particularly in chapter 8, very clearly appears to promulgate a form of situation ethics in Catholic moral theology, according to which, if in your concrete circumstances, or according to the complexity of one's limits, and I'm quoting two phrases from the document, you cannot obey a negative precept of the natural law, and here the focus is the sixth commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, then your conscience can inform you that, well, I'll do the best I can, and this is what God expects of me, only the best that I can do in my concrete circumstances for the time being. Now, that means, in practice, if it were applied to moral principles generally, the complete destruction of the moral teaching of the Catholic Church.
Sure.
Because anyone could say, well, in my concrete circumstances, given the complexity of my limits, I mean, just look at my situation. How can I be expected to obey this onerous commandment that I not engage in relations, marital relations, with my, quote, second wife, unquote?
Right.
And that is exactly the interpretation that Francis has made clear again and again, that he wants this document to be given, including his private letter to the bishops of Argentina, or rather in Buenos Aires, the Diocese of Buenos Aires in particular, who interpreted the document in just that way and said that for people for whom it is impossible, that they can be admitted to Holy Communion and be given absolution before admission to Holy Communion, even though they are living in a second marriage and have no intention of ending a relationship that our Lord himself called, quite simply, adultery. And Francis wrote to them privately and said, yes, there is no other interpretation of my document. And the correctio, which is the Latin shorthand for the correctio filialis,
okay,
puts together the proofs of Francis's intent here, which, by the way, he hasn't denied. He hasn't denied because he can't deny it. He really does intend that the church now allow people living in a state that our Lord called adultery to receive Holy Communion in certain cases. And we know what certain cases means. That's the exception that will quickly swallow the rule. So the results would be catastrophic. And I have to mention that he's overthrown the authentic magisterium, or he's attempting to overthrow it, which was affirmed by John Paul II and Benedict XVI, both of whom insisted that it is intrinsically impossible with someone living in an adulterous relationship to receive Holy Communion. I mean, that's obvious. And yet we have a wayward Roman pontiff attempting to promulgate precisely this error. So what do you do in that case?
Okay.
Well, doctors of the church, such as St. Robert Bellarmine, have speculated about the possibility of a pope promulgating heresy. One pope, Honorius I, was actually condemned by an ecumenical council after his death for favoring the spread of heresy, the Monothelite heresy, which denies that Christ has a human will. And that condemnation by an ecumenical council was affirmed by Pope Leo II, who added his own anathema in happened. Said Honorius aided and abetted the spread of heresy and should be anathematized. So that's one mechanism. A subsequent council could pronounce this document heretical, and a pope could affirm the decrees of the council. The doctors of the church have also said that if a pope becomes manifestly heretical, and I'm not making any judgment here on Francis, because heresy requires intent, and we don't know his intent, but if he becomes manifestly heretical, and it could be determined in some way that he has fallen into heresy, what they call these theologians an imperfect council of cardinals could get together, and they could declare that the pope has deposed himself by falling into heresy, because the cardinals have no authority to remove a pope. So those are the two ways. A council affirmed by a pope could recognize that his predecessor had fallen into heresy, or an imperfect council could theoretically declare that a reigning pope had deposed himself by falling into heresy. These were theoretical possibilities before, but now we're faced with a situation in which, well, we have at the very least another Honorius I, who was aiding and abetting the spread of heresy and could be anathematized for it. So the answer to the question is not clear. We as lay people can't do anything other than protest, which we've done, and point out to the pope that he has erred, which it is certainly possible for a pope to do in his day-to-day pronouncements, because as I indicated earlier, the pope's not a divine oracle. So we've done what we can as lay people, but it seems to me that the only way out of this situation is for a group of cardinals to get together and declare that these propositions that the Correctio identifies, the seven propositions, are contrary to the faith. If they did that, then the pope might back down and retract. Let me give you one historical example of how that worked. John the 22nd.
Okay.
Back in the 14th century, insisted, he gave a whole series of sermons, that the blessed departed, even after purgatory, will not see the face of God until the end of time, until the last day. He denied that they would enter into the beatific vision until the last judgment, which is not what the church had ever taught. And so he was opposed vigorously by theologians all over Christendom, especially the French theologians. And he impaneled a commission to advise him on his opinion. And the commission told him he was wrong. And on his deathbed, rather grudgingly, according to some historians, although that's not clear to me, he retracted his erroneous opinion. Literally, a day or two before he died, he retracted his false opinion. And then the subsequent pope infallibly defined as the truth of our faith that the blessed departed, either if they go immediately to heaven because they die as saints, or after purgation and purgatory, will go into the beatific vision with immediacy, not at the end of time. So that's an example of how the church can address the problem of a pontiff who insists on proposing an erroneous opinion, which I have to stress again, is possible with a pope if he departs from what the church has always taught, because the pope, again, is not a divine oracle.